So this story is one of the key stories for me after the resurrection. Here you've got a couple of Jesus' followers, Cleopas and another, might have been his friend, could have been his wife. There's an individual in John's gospel called Clopas who's standing at the foot of the cross. It might have been him, but it was someone who was in Jesus' inner circle, someone who Jesus was close to and had followed him, part of perhaps the 72 that are referred to in the gospel. And these two are walking away from Jerusalem, confused and uncertain as to what's going on. In this story of the road to Emmaus, we find that Jesus finds that he's in the Old Testament. If I think for many of us, the New Testament stories are alive and real. We read the Gospels, we read the epistles, we can understand what's going on. It seems that bit newer. Sometimes when we venture into the scriptures of the Old Testament, we can feel a bit lost. The stories are confusing. That they come out of a time that's so different from our own. But Jesus shows these two that he's there in the Old Testament. The promise of the suffering servant in Isaiah 40 and in Isaiah 53. The one who's going to be the son of David. As we looked last week at Psalm 110, the Lord said to my Lord, who was David looking for? The one who is promised right at the beginning by God to Adam and Eve. The offspring of Eve that will crush the serpent's head. All of these are promises in the Old Testament that point forward to Jesus. And one of the things that Jesus does is he teaches his disciples. We see it in the epistles. We see it in the teaching in Acts are echoes of what Jesus shared with them. We can find Jesus in the pages of the Old Testament. The next thing is this. Jesus finds himself in the Old Testament. As Jesus grew, there are big debates amongst theologians. Did Jesus learn to tie his shoelaces? Did he learn how to do things? Was he born with all of the faculties of the second person of the Trinity all alive and well? Or did he, as Philippians 2 suggests, empty himself, take on the form of a servant, become part of the creation, live with the limitations of what being inside the painting might mean instead of being the painter? Jesus finds himself in the Old Testament. His awareness of who he is, the promises which his life will embody, his awareness of self, the hope that he brings, is there in the Old Testament. And this, perhaps, is the biggest thing that can be seen in this story. You see, as these two travelers walk along the road to Emmaus, Jesus draws near to them. Now, the story says that God concealed his presence from them. But this is a thing that we experience in our own lives so often, is that Jesus' presence can be missed. It can be missed in our own lives. It can be missed when we are going through our daily routines. Jesus' presence can be missed. One of the reasons I think the poem Footprints is so powerful is because it speaks to this very thing. That sense of grieving in the writer of Footprints, that in the toughest times of life I could only see one set of footprints. And of course it's my dear child, it was then that I carried you. That's the whole punchline of the meditation of the footprints in the sand. And that sense that in tough times and difficulties, we can often be on our own. In the confusion around Jesus' death, Cleopas and his companion, they felt alone. They were going back to the familiar. They were leaving from Jerusalem, fearful, confused. They'd heard bits and pieces, but they weren't sure what to believe. Oftentimes people will say that while the resurrection was believed by people who are deluded, who wanted to believe it was true, But actually, the accounts that come to us from the apostles are of people who were not expecting Jesus to rise, even though they point out that Jesus himself in the upper room and beforehand had said that the Son of Man must suffer and die. That, as Jesus says once, it's only the sign of Jonah that you'll be given, that he'll end up in the belly of the whale and then be brought back to life, as it were. And so Jesus' presence can be missed in the midst of life's trials. Jesus' presence can be missed as we face the challenges that we face today, with all the restrictions that are being placed on us to meet together, to be with one another. We can't do that. And it's easy for the walls to close in and for our vision to become short-sighted, and we miss that Jesus is with us. The next thing is that these two companions, they were preoccupied by their circumstances. How often in our days, in our lives, are we focused on the circumstances of our lives? It might be things that are happening currently, things that have happened in the past, or we're fearfully anticipating or concerned about what might come in the future. Those circumstances shape our judgment. They shape how we interact with other people, with ourselves, and of course, they affect with how we interact with God. So often in our lives, we are in a position where we are looking for God to rescue us from what it is that we feel trapped by. And yet, in that moment, those circumstances are taking a higher place in our consideration than Jesus is. And that's not how it's intended to be. And I'm going to leave you at that point, and we are now going to go back to this story. Thank you, Liam.
On the road to Emmaus. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel, and what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to see the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus." He said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going further, but they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening, the day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread.
So let's go forward to that slide where we were, that they were so preoccupied with their circumstances. When circumstances dictate our mood, our outlook, it's easy for disappointment to get a hold of us. And we start trying to imagine how we ourselves can work our way out of this problem. We're perhaps looking for someone else to do so. If we look to God, we're probably looking for God to work us out of our circumstances. And that's okay. Many of the Psalms are involved in that discussion, that plea, that cry, "Oh God, have mercy on me." We've looked at them over these past weeks. But I want to focus on this. They missed the one in whose presence they were, the one who changes circumstances. One of the things I love about this picture is that as those three figures are heading off to the right, you can see the sun as it's setting. And the sun is a picture of the light and the power and the wonder of creation, of the sunset and the dawn, the beauty of God's creation right there, in which Jesus was involved. All there, all working, all around them, the numinous of God. And yet they're caught up in uncertainty and difficulty and sorrow and concern. Jesus is talking to them. He's giving them the Bible study of all Bible studies. I once heard a preacher say, "When I get to heaven, the first video I want to see is that Bible study. Jesus preaching about Jesus from the pages of the Old Testament. Finding himself in it and sharing it with his followers. Perhaps in familiar ways, ways that they'd heard before." But they're so concerned by their circumstances, they do not see the one who's with them, who by his very presence changes those circumstances. What do I mean? Think of our current situation. Think of our current situation with this virus. We're concerned at the moment about people who are contracting the virus and dying. It's awful. Perhaps more than at any other time, we're aware of how fragile life is, of mortality, of the things that people die from. We're starting to ask questions about how is it that our lives come to an end, some tragically young, others at the end of their lives as expected. And as we do so, the circumstances of that start to fill the pages of our newspapers, our magazines, our live feeds, and our news feeds on our phones. And what we do is we lose touch with the fact that our lives are in God's hands. My mom was saying, had I shared the story of Father Giuseppe, and she was telling me of this Catholic priest who had contracted COVID-19 while caring for his flock in Italy. And he was in his 70s, I believe, and he was offered the use of a ventilator, but he forewent that so a younger person could get the use of the ventilator, and they survived, and he passed away. And at his passing, people applauded him. He knew his life was in Jesus' hands. I wonder for how many of us our decisions are made. We instinctively act to protect ourselves. Indeed, it can be right to do so. But we live our lives in the presence of the one who changes the circumstances we're in. If we're on our own, we're not truly on our own. If we're having to cope on our own with all the family responsibilities and the difficulties of working from home, we're not on our own. If we're having to think through how we care for neighbors and friends and relatives, we're not on our own. Diane was going to get some masks from someone to pass to another member of the congregation who was not being provided with personal protection equipment. And as I sat out in the car, I could tell that the conversation she was having with the individual, social distancing applying, was going to be a long one. It was going to be a half hour or so. And so I sat back in the car and I started to pray and I realized I wasn't entirely sure what I was going to share this Sunday. And as I was starting to pray, a bus pulls up alongside me in Bonnyrigg. And on the side of the bus it says, "Try praying. It's easier than you think." And I sat back in my chair and laughed and took God's gentle rebuke. Because in that moment, as I was concerned about what to share with you this morning, the truth was that I was not on my own. Given the history that we have with Adam and Eve, our tendency is to hide. The shame of who we are causes us to hide, to believe that the responsibility for our lives and our wisdom rests on our own shoulders. But it does not. Every day that we set out into the circumstances of the day, Jesus is with us, sharing his word, encouraging us on. There in the pages of the scriptures, in the inspiration that he gives us, in the depth of our heart and in our mind. And he is also there for us. The reality of our circumstances is changed by the presence of Jesus. For he is endlessly creative. And as this picture reminds us, the beauty and the majesty and the depth and the detail is all there. And so, of course, they invite Jesus in. He pretends making to go on, and they invite him in. And in inviting him in, suddenly they discover they find Jesus in an unexpected place. As he breaks the bread, he gives thanks, shares it with them. Now they see him. Now they see him. His presence is revealed. In that intimate moment of breaking bread, his presence is revealed. And they see who he is in their midst. They see who he is. The pleasure of eating together is one of the great joys of life. It's one of the things that we're missing. I'm sure when the restrictions are lifted, many of us are thinking who we want to share a meal with, who we want to share time with. So, and it's wonderful to see people over video links. There's something missing in that physicality of the person being there. And in that moment, Jesus is revealed to them. And of course, their circumstances change. And they don't just change in that moment. They now look back over that Bible study, that insight that Jesus has been giving them. And he's saying, wasn't it like fire in us? It was like a fire burning within us as he talked with us on the road. And so they make their way back to Jerusalem. Now, we live in Gorebridge. Gorebridge is a very hilly place. It's a brave place to have a bicycle. And actually, we have more younger people and fewer older people than any other town this size in Midlothian. That might be because of the hills. You're always going to have a hill to go up or go down when you're leaving from Gorebridge. And that's what Jerusalem's like. It's a city on a hill. Emmaus is much lower than Jerusalem. And of course, as they've been concerned, Cleopas and his friend have been heading downhill towards Emmaus. Now they need to turn tail and go back uphill. They're going to work some muscle up. This is a tougher journey. And as they head uphill, they have work ahead of them. As they want to carry this news to the apostles, they're going to want to be making good pace. They're going to be working hard. Their hearts filled. They're filled with this teaching. They're trying just to gather it all together so they don't forget anything, so they can tell Peter and Andrew and John and the rest of the disciples what they've heard. And as they go back up the hill, they've got work to do, building muscle, as I've said before at this time of year, building muscle as they head back to Jerusalem. And as they did so, I wonder if they shared a psalm of ascent. It was the natural thing for pilgrims to do as they walked towards Jerusalem, just like football fans start to sing and chant as they make their way to the terraces. Just as I know for you, you start to sing songs in your mind. You're hoping maybe one of your favorite songs is going to be part of worship today. I hope they were today. There were some favorites in there. Our hearts are turned towards them. We start to sing and recite and remember. I wonder if they sang a psalm of ascent. And here's one of my favorites. This is Psalm 122. And I love this phrase, a song for pilgrims ascending to Jerusalem. And it's the Psalm of David. I rejoiced with those who said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. Our feet are standing in your gates, Jerusalem. Jerusalem is built like a city that is closely compacted together. That is where the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, to praise the name of the Lord according to the statute given to Israel. There stand the thrones for judgment, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May those who love you be secure, and may there be peace within your walls and security within your citadels. For the sake of my family and friends, I will say, peace be within you. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your prosperity. I wonder if they sang a psalm of ascent as they headed back up the hill to Jerusalem on their pilgrimage to take the news of the risen Jesus. And of course, once they get there, as Luke tells us, Jesus appears again in their midst and says, peace be with you. They're getting their heads around what it means to have the risen Jesus as a part of their life. And over the next 40 days or so, he keeps appearing and reappearing and reappearing until, witnessed by 500 or so, he ascends into heaven and sends his Holy Spirit so he could be with each one of us. And learning to live with the reality of the presence of the risen Jesus is the task of discipleship. That's what we learn to do. That's what you and I all learn to do as we follow him day by day. That's the story of the Emmaus Road. How do we live with the risen Jesus day by day in our routines, in our work life, in our family life as we play? And so here's what I want you to do as part of that. I want you to contribute to our own psalm of ascent. As we look at this incredible picture, and this speaks to me, that's the way down. They're going to be heading back up the hill. What is it that Jesus is saying to us at the moment? How is it that we express ourselves to God when we're praying and worshiping? And what I want you to do, each one of you, is to write a couple of lines. Just a couple of lines. You can put them in on the live chat. You can send them by email or WhatsApp. Find a way to just get a couple of lines. And what I'm going to do over the next week is we're going to build them together into our own psalm of ascent. I'm going to try and stitch in everything together, cap it and tail it. We're going to try and get as much richness in there as possible. As you express, each one of you express that sense of going to the house of the Lord, of worship, of adoration, of what we need from God at this time. And we're going to put it into a psalm. I hope you're up for that. If you want to get the rhythm of the Psalms, just read the Psalms of Ascent again, reading through from Psalm 120 to 134. Those are the Psalms of Ascent. And as we put it together, may we find in there that unexpectedly Jesus is in our midst. Unexpectedly Jesus is speaking to us. And unexpectedly we have that joyful realization that he's here and our circumstances, though in some ways unchanged, have just been transformed. May you know God's peace and presence. And as you write this, be thinking about the people you love, those you care for, those who are in your concerns at the moment. And let's write a psalm together. May we pray.